Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, no matter where you're listening, around the world, this is Sedona Talk Radio.
Welcome to Pandora's Box. This is your host, Kalia. And today is Tuesday, November 20th. We're right before Thanksgiving. So I want to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. Even if you're not in the U.S., I know other countries have different times for Thanksgiving. But it's always good to take time to give thanks for what is good in our lives, especially if you have been suffering through a dark night or struggling to overcome a bad situation. Sometimes we can get so focused on the bad situation that we forget to give thanks. We forget to have gratitude about what is good. We forget to count our blessings. So this is a really good time to focus on what we do have to be thankful for, to look at what the gratitude in your life, to give thanks. You know, it's not, I always say, it's not about eating. It's about giving thanks. So today, the topic of our conversation is forgiving the unforgivable. And I have a very dear friend of mine is here to talk about forgiveness and to talk about her new book called Forgiveness, Lori Rubenstein. So welcome, Lori.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you, Kalia.
I'm so happy to have you. And Lori, would you mind just giving a little background? I love your story about how you went from attorney to life coach, to relationship coach.
To forgiveness teacher.
Yes, to forgiveness teacher.
Well, so my background is basically, I feel like I was really set up for this from birth, like most of us are. My parents were divorced when I was 4 and a half. And what I always say to people is they did divorce very badly. I grew up and I went through the feminist movement and wanted to be a social worker and then went to law school instead. Because what I learned was people respected the degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even though I would say the exact same thing with a degree that I was saying before I had the degree, somehow, you know, people gave it more credence. So, you know, I ended up going that direction. And I worked in the battered women's movement and in the divorce family law field for about 18 years. And it was really a frustrating experience, I have to say.
I'll bet.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you hand your power over to a third person to make a decision about your life, just the fact of doing that, even though we're forced to do that, you know, in this country for the most part,
mm-hmm.
It's very disempowering. And if you're a person who's been abused at all, you know, emotionally abused in, like, you know, narcissistic relationship, whatever it is, your word, the court system doesn't take you seriously, first of all.
Right.
And secondly, they'll, it's really hard to say this, but women oftentimes end up looking like they're the crazy ones.
Yes. Because they're emotional, because they have emotion, they're more emotional, they're in touch with their emotions.
Right. And if you've ever been in a passive-aggressive kind of relationship,
mm-hmm.
You do feel like you're crazy.
Right.
And trying to explain what living with someone like that does to you, much less trying to explain to the court what it does to your children, is very, very difficult.
Yes.
And during that whole process of being an attorney and representing people in court, and I didn't just represent women, I represented men too,
mm-hmm.
I learned that they got to a place of healing when they started forgiving themselves and their spouses.
Which brings us to our topic of forgiveness. And,
right.
And we have forgiving the unforgivable. It's such a catchy little phrase. But, I mean, it's a lot meatier than that. A lot of people that are listening today might come here with heavy hearts and just feel that, you know, I don't know if I can ever get to forgiveness. And I look at non-forgiveness is a type of energy cord that keeps someone attached to the perpetrator through the emotions of anger, hatred, resentment, a desire for revenge. And this is something that I teach. When people realize that there is actually an energy cord through their non-forgiveness tying them to that person, hooking them into that person, they say, yes, I'd like to forgive. I want to forgive. I want to release this cord. But the question is, how? Mm-hmm. How do I do this?
Well, one of the things that, I really like that whole idea that if the picture, the visualization that you can give somebody of it's an energy cord, I often say it's like being chained to that person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that same thing. And when you decide that it's not about what they did to you, but it's about how you feel and how you want to be in the world,
mm-hmm.
then you're making that choice to let go. But you're not doing it because what they did is okay. And you're not doing it because you trust them or you don't have to be a fool again. You don't have to be naive. You're doing it because you want to be a healthy, whole individual, and you realize that that energy cord, that feeling inside of you of retaliation, of anger, of hurt, of shame, and any of those feelings are injuring your soul. And so if you can picture, you know, your soul wanting to be happy, but it can't be free if you still have this chain, you know, like being chained in the dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get out of the dungeon in order to be free.
And so how do you take someone from that process of saying, okay, I understand why I need to forgive. Mm-hmm. I understand that forgiveness isn't about making that person's action or behavior okay. I understand it is about setting myself free from that chain that's keeping me in the dungeon. But I don't know what to do.
Right. So I have a 4-step process that helps mm-hmm. people on how to forgive. It's called Living with Forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And can I talk about the steps?
Yes, let's just get right into it, and then we can go from there.
Okay. So before you even start on the steps, I would say the first thing you really have to decide is, are you ready to forgive? So, you know, you can understand that forgiveness is good for you, but then there is a time for everything. And so, for example, if you're a battered woman in a relationship that you're being mm-hmm. abused, that's mm-hmm. not the time to forgive yet. You know,
yeah.
It might be the time to still be really angry and get out and protect yourself.
Right. Right. Like, and so what you're saying, in a sense, and I think this is really, really important for people to understand, is that that time to forgive, we're not expected to just jump over all of those stages of emotion.
Exactly. So I say to people, you know, you're going to know when you're sick and tired of being hurt, of being angry, of being, you know, bitter, you know, when you're just really sick and tired of being that way yourself, that's when it's time to say, okay, what can I do? I'm ready to forgive. So when you're at that place, then you start on the four steps. And the first step is acceptance. It's about acknowledging the truth of what is really going on. And I have this real thing going on, Kalia, right now about truth, because I really believe that we can't really heal until we face our truth. And that includes, you know, what we call the shadow self. You know, it includes the good, the bad, the ugly. And when we can really say, this is the truth about what is happening in my life right now, that's where we start to heal. So that acceptance piece is, I accept that this is my reality.
So accepting, for example, I've been in this relationship that has been draining my energy, where I'm feeling used, where I'm not feeling valued, where I'm feeling betrayed.
I'm feeling
that a lot of people are in this space, and facing the truth, what would that look like in that situation, just to acknowledge that, okay, this is where I've been, this is how I feel.
Yeah, this is the reality of my situation right now. My husband has cheated on me. He's been, you know, abusing me for years. I feel like I'm not good enough. I feel like, as a result of this, I feel like, you know, I'm worthless. And I don't like feeling this way anymore. I don't want to feel this way. But the truth is that I do.
The truth is that you do want to feel this way?
That I do feel this way.
The truth is that you do feel this way. Okay. Okay,
I don't want to feel
this way, but I do.
Yeah. You know, like,
and it seems to me like that's more like honoring where you're at.
Like.
I'm sorry, we're talking over each other. It's like we're honoring where we're at. I feel worthless. I feel like crap.
And that's the truth.
Yeah.
And that's the truth. And it doesn't mean that it's true. It just means that that's how you feel.
So that's what you're accepting.
That's what you're accepting. I could just feel that in my heart as we talk about that. You know, that's such a painful acknowledgement for so many people.
It's like getting to the root of how you really feel about things.
And what it's really done, you know, what really happened here? So it's not just about, this sort of leads us into step two also. It's not just about he did this and this and this to me. But it's that I've been living this, he's done this to me, and I've been living this lie, and I've been covering for him, and I've been telling my parents this, and I've been pretending that. And the second step is personal responsibility.
Taking ownership for your part in being stuck in that situation.
Right. And the reason that's so important, especially in forgiveness, is that as long as we stay stuck in that he did this and this and this to me, we're still in that victim mentality. Because if we're looking at, you know, I feel this way because he did this to me, then I can't get out of it myself. I am still stuck. I literally will remain chained to him until he lets me go, because I'm
right. You're giving him the power.
Exactly.
Right. So that personal responsibility is to say, basically, to own your peace, to own what is keeping you there, because in all reality, it may seem, and we're kind of on this role of a victim of abuse, so to speak. So we can roll with that one because it's really good to have an example that people can relate to that they can get into.
Exactly.
But on the most part, people aren't really held prisoner in their own homes, even though it may feel like it for some women.
Mm-hmm. They're held prisoner by their mind,
by their
belief.
Mm-hmm.
The fear is so great. I understand that. The fear is sometimes absolutely debilitating, and that's why this piece isn't good when you're still in the fear. The forgiveness piece.
Right.
If you're still in that fearful place, you got to get out and get safe.
Right.
And you will have time to forgive later.
Right.
So in that personal responsibility place, there's a couple things. So if you ask yourself first, you know, am I responsible for some of this? You know, where can I accept responsibility? There are some things that doesn't really make sense for, and I'm going to give the example of, you know, I was sexually abused as a child. Taking personal responsibility doesn't really fit there.
Right.
Or somebody murdered my loved one. Or my child was in a car accident with a drunk driver and was killed. So those are the other big things or examples of big things that we call the unforgivable. And in the step two of the process, you're not necessarily taking personal responsibility. You didn't create the accident, but you take personal responsibility for how you live after the accident. You take personal responsibility for how you literally feel and live your life for the rest
because
of your life.
Because you can choose in any of those situations to feel and live your life as victim.
Yes.
Like a person that was sexually abused as a child. That's a tragedy. That's a tragedy that has happened. But I have seen people make it their story that they live their life with.
And it becomes, and when you say that it makes, you know, it's their story, you know, that is who they become. And if you are presenting yourself in the world as, hi, my name is Lori, I was abused as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, hi, my name is Lori, and I'm living this amazing life right now, and I'm working this great job, and I have these great kids, and, you know, it's just a change in where you're focusing your attention in your life. Yes, that did happen, and yes, that affects you, and it affects you profoundly, and it will affect you profoundly forever, but you don't live in that story.
Right.
Right.
Right. So there's a releasing of the story that has to happen in here too. Are we moving too far ahead? Is that still appropriate?
No, I think that's still that really is part of personal responsibility, because personal responsibility goes to the thoughts that you think about what happens in your life.
Mm-hmm.
So in my book, for example, there was a woman who was abused by her grandfather as a child, sexually abused.
Hmm.
When she grew up, she was in an abusive relationship. Then she remarried a man who ended up having AIDS and infecting her. And then she got so sick from the HIV virus that she had a near-death experience and was given the choice to come back or not. So now here's somebody, for example, who has multiple reasons to be depressed, be angry, be bitter, be miserable, you know, have a really crappy life. And instead, she's written numerous books. She's written, done a DVD documentary. She goes around the world and she speaks about the soul and about what is, how important it is to accept all of these things that happen to us as gifts for our lessons, you know, for us to grow, which really brings us to number three, is finding the gift or the lesson in every experience.
That's interesting, because when you told me that story and you said that she had a near-death experience and was given the choice to come back or not, you know, most of us would be saying, take me, please. I don't want any more of that.
Right.
You know, that's a pretty big decision. To make a decision after all of that.
And you're weighing 90 pounds, you know, your body's all diseased. You're literally melted away to nothing. And you're willing to come back because you know you have work to do. And look at all the lives of all the people she's touched since then.
Wow. That's an amazing story.
Right. And so it's always a curious thing to me, you know, Kalia, like why you take one thing. So, for example, we can take something that seems pretty small next to that, and that is a spouse creating cheating on another spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it devastate some people and other people are able to get over it and move on? And I think the answer is forgiveness.
Some people hold on to that wound and other people let it go.
Right. Exactly. Because we've all seen those people who 20 years after divorce, because somebody cheated on them, they're still bitter and angry.
Right.
And they hate the whole other sex because you can't trust anybody.
Right. I've heard that one a lot too.
Yeah.
And it's really sad, because people that are in that place don't often realize they are. It's even more sad when they do. You know, it's like the people that say, I never want to be that bitter old woman. I don't want to be that bitter old woman. They see that seed in themselves. They see that part of themselves. And they're able to say, I don't want to become that.
And one of the hard, it's hard in our society to not become that, because we know that we have friends who will support us in the story of you done me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we see it here, you know, in wars. You know, we can't, somebody does something to us as a country, nobody was saying forgive Bin Laden, you know, we need to forgive Bin Laden, we need to move on with our lives, we need to stop holding on to that. Instead, people were saying for 10 years, kill him.
Believing that was going to do something. I think that's it, believing that there's some kind of power there.
Mm-hmm.
And don't you think that's another reason that people don't let go, is because, well, there's some kind of a power, a false power, a false belief in holding on. But there's also something else, and that is when people go through, for example, a cheating spouse who has cheated repeatedly, mm-hmm. and the woman chooses to go into anger and bitterness. She may find a power in anger and bitterness that says, I'm never going to let somebody hurt me like that again, so I'm going to hold on to this to protect myself.
Right, and that's part of, I mean, I've done a lot of classes, and I know you have too, around letting down the walls and really understanding, and I think it's so important for people to understand that, back to personal responsibility, at this point, you know, this happened 5 years ago, let's say,
mm-hmm.
He didn't hurt, it's not about him hurting you. It's about you continuing to hurt yourself.
Right. So after a certain period of time.
Right.
After a certain period of time, it's time to take a real good look at that.
it really is time, and then, you know, trusting yourself that you can handle if somebody's going to hurt you again, that you can handle it.
Well, and part of that, the lesson, isn't that step number three is getting the gift?
Exactly. So step three is the gift and the lesson in that.
Uh-huh.
And it's really learning, a lot of it comes back to learning about, this is my favorite gift, who we are. What is our purpose here? What are we here to do? You know, how strong are we? The idea that everybody can help and do something for someone else is amazing. That every single person who's listening to this right now can be a blessing in somebody else's life.
Absolutely.
And that's power.
You know, I remember back after I first learned about narcissism and the pain, just the sheer pain I was going through from that relationship. And I had a girlfriend, one girlfriend. Most of my friends were gone by then because they just couldn't get it, what I was going through. You know, it was just one of those things where nobody could really be there for me in the depth of the pain that I was in. Except for I had one friend. And this one friend had gone through something like that herself. And she said to me, Kalia, one day you're going to help another woman to go through this.
Wow. And did you, when you remember that she said that, and you remember that, why? Why do you remember that?
She was so right on. Not only did I help one, but that became my life.
Yeah.
That became my life.
Right. And so we want everyone out there to hear that you don't have any idea of what you can be doing for other people until you step into that life. And sometimes getting rid of the old life, getting rid of the old story, is exactly what you need to do to move into that next life.
And I think there's a real letting go that has to happen because you talked about fear earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There can be a real fear in letting go of what is familiar and comfortable, and we don't really want to say that abuse or repression is familiar or comfortable, but that familiarity, especially if somebody grows up in a repressed or abusive environment, it becomes so familiar, and in some way that familiarity makes it comfortable. There's a real fear to step out of that because at least that's known.
Right, and there's a fear to, when we talk about the fear of the unknown, to really understand that if you've lived one way for years, you can't even imagine what life is like not living with fear. I was talking to somebody today who's during our meeting, even though the spouse, you know, they've decided they're going to get a divorce. But the spouse kept texting her during the meeting, telling her where she needed to be and when. And she's talking about, I'm talking to her about what life is going to be like to not be controlled by him. That went nowhere, Kalia, because she can't imagine a life without him texting her and telling her what to do. Like, you can't, so even though that could be, you know, a dream maybe, what that is, what the reality of that situation of not being controlled is so unknown that it's not even imaginable at the time.
Right. Right. It's so ingrained in her to have him texting and her jumping, responding.
Mm-hmm.
that for her to make, to see herself with a life that isn't controlled by somebody else is, yeah, beyond her imagination.
Yeah, yeah. So when we start, you know, when they get to the point where people get to the point where they start talking about, you know, wanting to forgive and wanting to let go and wanting to release, and they start learning the gifts and they start seeing what the lessons are and they learn more, it's a really great time. I've always said this, that divorce is a fabulous time to learn about who you are.
Yes.
And it's not just what you're made of, you know, in terms of being strong and being able to make it through, but it's also it's like an opportunity to recreate your life. You get to be who you want to be. So when you've had somebody, you know, let's say there's a murder in your family, or a child has committed suicide, or has been killed by a drunk driver, or your child is in jail for killing somebody else by a drunk driver. I mean, all these things are the realities and the truths of our lives.
Right.
What does that mean about us? You know, when you're, for example, your child killed somebody in a drunk driving accident, there is a story you can tell yourself about that. You know, you can be like, it's my fault, I wasn't a good enough parent, I should have done this. When they start thinking, I should have done that, you can make the whole trauma drama about you and feel shame and guilt forever. And you can really get stuck in that shame and guilt. I mean, that's a cycle you can, you know, totally never get out of.
Right.
Or you can say, you know what, from this moment on, I'm going to dedicate my life to educating people about it. I'm going to learn everything I can learn about the subject. Or you can go on to become an artist. I mean, you know what I mean? There are things that you can do as a gift for other people in the world, where you take the center off of yourself, where it's not so selfish, where you're just looking at poor me, poor me, poor me.
Well, don't you think that sometimes that it is the tragedy that reveals the soul?
It's the tragedy that reveals why you're here, why your soul chose this situation. You know, I think it allows a lot of people to step into that place of I am more than the reality, what I think is reality. You know, I am greater than this.
And sometimes when we see the sheer power that it takes to overcome tragedy or trauma in our lives, we find our own strength, a strength that we didn't even know we had.
And that is, I would say that's probably the number one gift for everybody that everybody experiences.
Mm-hmm.
The getting over of a trauma is that, wow, what am I made out of?
Yeah.
For me, I can say there were other lessons along the way, personal lessons about myself, like where I got to really look at my responsibility in the breakup of my marriage and in my husband doing all the cheating and all that stuff. My piece in it, I learned, for example, was that I was very, very controlling in the relationship. And I think I really was this kind of person who wanted so badly to have a good marriage that I was going to make that happen. So even though my heart was in the right place, and I do believe that my heart was in the right place,
right,
how it showed up and how I behaved was different. And so it makes sense, too, if I went back, you know, logically and looked at my childhood where, you know, my father and mother divorced. I felt betrayed. I felt left. I saw him cheat on her and leave us. And then the second husband came in, cheated on her, and left us, too. So
yeah.
I had this story, all men cheat, all men leave. So I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen to me. I'm going to make sure this doesn't happen to me. So I became very, you know, controlling and, like, acted as though he were a child and I was the parent. I was a mother. You know, how attractive is that?
Right.
Relationship. So that was my piece.
So how did you come to that? That must have been a hard piece to look at.
It was so hard because it's such an ugly thing, you know, looking at that.
It's always ugly to see those kind of pieces in ourselves.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a hard thing for us to come to terms with. I see that that part of me that might not have been so easy to live with. Nah, how could that be?
And, you know, there I was out there in the world being, you know, on boards and, you know, I was active and, you know, a real community activist, yet at home I was very controlling, and I understand it was because I didn't want to lose my husband. So, you know, what I did is exactly what I didn't want to do and attracted that exact scenario to me so I could learn from that. So it came to my attention, actually, when, you're going to laugh, everybody's going to laugh at this, when I went on JDate, it's a Jewish dating online service. This was like a year or two after the divorce, and maybe a year. And the number one person that popped up was my ex.
Oh no!
Like the number one best person for you is him.
Oh no! What'd you do with that?
Oh, I was so pissed. But in his description, he wrote that he was looking for a person who was not controlling.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh, is that where it kind of hit you in the face?
Yes. It was like, whoa. It was a big whammy. And honestly, I will say to you, I just was pissed off that he would say that I was controlling.
Mm-hmm, of course.
You know, so, but that, it put the seed in my head, for sure.
Yeah.
And I started noticing other couples where the wife treated the husband the way I treated my ex, and I didn't want to be around them. It was so uncomfortable being in a room where somebody was, like, putting down their spouse in front of you, or, you know, it felt very, very uncomfortable, and I realized I did that all the time. I put him down all the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there was the gift, is getting to see this aspect of yourself. And so was it hard to let that go?
I actually went into counseling to work on that issue because I knew that seeing it in other people was so unattractive, I didn't want to continue to see that in myself. So it took a lot of, it literally took years for me to work on that.
But that was a big gift that came out of the marriage. We're kind of talking about the gift here.
Yeah, the blessing. It was such a blessing because now I have such a good
Are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Well, it looks like we dropped Lori. She should be back. For some reason, she got dropped. Anyhow, we are here interviewing Lori Rubenstein on the topic of forgiveness. And we were just talking about she's got a four-step process. And I'm going to wait for Lori to come back to talk more about that four-step process, but the process so far, if I can find it in my notes here, is to accept and acknowledge how you feel in any given situation, taking personal responsibility. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I fell off somehow.
I'm recapping. And now we're at finding the gift in the situation.
Right.
So finding the gift is part of Lori's four-step process that will help us forgive. And so after finding the gift, what is the next step?
So the fourth and final step is living in gratitude. And the reason I put that in is because I feel like this is a muscle-building exercise that you practice by living in gratitude,
mm-hmm.
and being grateful for what is in your life. And I think if you remember that each thing that comes to us is ultimately a gift for our personal growth, then you can be grateful for those things that come into your life, the little things, and then eventually even the big things. So, I was talking to somebody on the East Coast about losing her house.
I'm sure a lot of people have
Sandy.
Done. Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, and so how terrifying that is. And at the same time, what are the gifts? So going to those gifts, there's a freedom. You learn what is important in your life. Nobody in her family died, thank God.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there's the gift.
There's the gift. And there's freedom. I mean, it's very interesting, but we're terrified of losing what we have. But when we do lose what we have, there is a sense of freedom that goes with that.
There can be, yes.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So it's finding the gratitude in all the little things, and then when something big happens, you know that it's happening for a reason, and you can even be grateful for something that looks so tragic.
Yeah, and that's the tough one. So Lori, it looks like we have somebody with a question. Are you open to answering a question?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've got area code 804. You have a question?
Yes, good evening, ladies. Excellent show. I've lived through pretty much a lot of what you're talking about, and I actually have a narcissist who I'm dealing with, and she was threatening to me. I have her all boxed in, and I send her light and love, but unfortunately, there's some mental illness there too, so I don't think she'll ever come out of what she's dealing with in her life, even though she reinvents herself. She just keeps repeating the same patterns. And I wonder if you could address something like that, because she actually thinks she's God. She has a God complex.
Well, so, actually, what I have to say about that is that, you know, being that our topic is on forgiveness, the focus, I would recommend taking the focus off, you know, is she going to get better? Can she be helped? And put the focus on what is preventing you from coming to terms with what has happened in your life here with this woman. And how can you...
Oh, I have.
For you can let go and free yourself.
No, I have. I've moved on. I'm doing unbelievable things for mankind. And I'd love to speak with you off air because I think you'd be fascinated with what I've been through. I have a few books and a blockbuster movie looking to come out of me, but it's just that I felt somehow this was like a twin flame connection for me, because my wife, who was an earth angel to me for 35 and a half years, blessed me with the lesson of unconditional love, and this woman claimed she was holding a place of unconditional love in her heart for mankind. So I immediately resonated with that and extended my unconditional love to her in support of that, and she accepted, but she was manipulative and deceptive, and over time started projecting things onto my truth, which I wouldn't allow. And when I called her out as a narcissist, then she was very vindictive and threatening, and cut communications completely, and I still send her notes and tell her that I am there for her, because what you were describing earlier fits her to a T. She told me in conversations, I've never met her physically, but she said that she had sexual abuse from an older brother in her childhood, and she's had 3 marriages, a couple of internet affairs, and when I first came into contact with her, she was breaking up from an affair she was having with a student. So it's very tragic, and I just want to show her there is somebody in the world that has no motives except to have that unconditional love and support for her, but she has to come back to that.
Do you feel that that's really the truth, though? I'll let you go, Lori. I just want to ask, do you really feel that that is the truth, that that is your intent with this woman, is to offer unconditional love, or do you feel that
that's
another intent?
Yes, no, that is. And I also found something very interesting when I was researching 2 words, truth and love, and which is more important, it's truth, because without truth you can't have the proper love.
So, Lori, what would you say to
this? So my question really is, why did she come into your life?
She came to be a blessing to me. I was tending to push and bulldoze my way through things that I wanted to manifest, and she said, no, just stop, be quiet, it's done, it's all taken care of, and she was right. And when I saw that and saw how I could let go and let God when things were beyond my control, or if it just got too chaotic, every time I did that, new things would happen that were beautiful, that were manifesting beautifully.
Okay, so what I want to say to you then is that when people, if you feel like she was a twin flame or, you know, a soulmate, she comes into your life to teach you this amazing, amazing lesson. There's a misperception that somebody has to be in your life forever. And sometimes there are people who can touch us for a second in our life and can be a soulmate, or people who can touch us for a lifetime. It's not the quantity of time with her, but the quality. And so if what you got out of her was this incredible, amazing gift, then accept the gift, and then you get to move on.
I have, but the problem is, as my truth is shown to people, she's a part of it, and it's a horrible thing that she did. It's
Are you
a paranormal.
Saying that you feel that she's a part of your life, but she doesn't want to be?
She manifested in a very paranormal way, and the synchronicities involved with this, it's very, very bizarre, and I can tell you about it off air if I may sometime.
Well, I just feel that it's kind of dangerous territory to be treading when there's kind of, I mean, we can get into that. I have people that get into that with, well, this psychic told me we were soulmates and we were destined to be together. When you have a belief system, true or not, that has to do with other worlds, it can be really dangerous, because we can subject ourselves to a refusal to let go and to move on with our life. And I think what Lori is talking about in her stage of acceptance, you know, accept that this relationship is over, that you can't change her, that there's nothing you can do to change her, that all you can do is change yourself.
Well, I do accept all that. I just am there for her if she decides to come back. I'm not waiting on her or whatever. No, again, when you fully grasp what I'm talking about, I've had everything from UFO, paranormal, and near-death experiences, and some of it's quite shocking. I have stuff sitting in the White House looking to be unwound, and indirectly I caused the Speaker of the House to resign from office in shame years ago.
Okay,
so,
we're getting a little bit off topic here.
I understand,
so I just want to encourage you to look at how you might still be holding on. And to really, really work at at possibly those steps of letting go so that this person isn't in your life in the same way anymore, having that same effect.
Exactly.
So thank you. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
And I want to get back to that last step, to the gratitude, Lori.
Okay. So I feel in the mornings that there's a gratitude practice that I have, I can say, has been really, really helpful. I do this thing where I just think about five things that I'm grateful for every day. And I do that as part of my meditation and prayer that I do in the mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't do, you know, it's very easy to say, you know, I'm grateful for my children, I'm grateful for my house, I'm grateful for the food, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Kind of
grateful for those.
Gratefulness.
Exactly. We don't, yeah, and we can do that, but I'm talking about, like, really, like, if my back has hurt one day, and I've had a back injury for, like, 30 years, and I notice I didn't hurt as much. Thank you. I'm so grateful for not hurting, you know?
Yeah.
And really feeling what, feeling in your heart, like dropping into your heart space. You can actually put your hand on your heart and take a deep breath and say, you know, I am so grateful for whatever it is you're grateful for. I'm so grateful for my little kitty, you know, who's sitting next to me and follows me all around the house like a dog, you know. Whatever it is, not just saying it, not just thinking it, but feeling it. And
yeah.
And as you're practicing that gratitude, the things you need to forgive become fewer and fewer, because ultimately, Kalia, when we get to the end of all of this, is you realize there's really nothing to forgive because everything was a blessing for us.
Right, and I think that we do come to that, but it does take time, because I look back at that relationship I was talking about where, you know, the girlfriend told me I would be helping people as a result. And I look at that now, and it's like, yeah, boy, yeah, look at the blessing.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing to forgive. I no longer feel anger, or, you know, that it's all gone. But it took a very long time to get there.
Yes,
and knowing that,
you know, it's a practice. And that's why I love gratitude being the fourth step, is because
mm-hmm.
you get to live in forgiveness. You get to live with forgiveness. That's why I named the process that way, living with forgiveness, because it is something we literally, when we, as human beings, as, you know, souls having these human experiences, there's probably something that we can forgive every day.
So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and that's kind of what I was talking about at the beginning, is that, you know, even if there's tragedy happening or trauma happening or bad things happening, if we can spend some time looking at what is good, that can shift the energy.
Yes, and I so believe, Kalia, that if each of us is responsible and shifts that energy in ourselves, it will affect the people that are around us. And then the people who are around us, their energy will shift, and it will expand and expand and expand. And I really believe that, you know, peace on earth, the thing that we all so desire, is really possible when we find it in ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like, where do you look? Within. I want to ask, I did notice in your book there were, you know, a couple stories that were just, like, unbelievable, just like the one you told earlier. And I noticed that some of the stories that I read, that people said, well, I just made a decision I wasn't going to carry this anymore, and I decided I was going to forgive, almost as if forgiveness was a decision.
Yeah. And it works really well for some people to just
yeah.
make decisions.
Yeah, I kind of was getting, wow, I wish I could just decide on some things that I'm going to let it go and just have it be gone. because I heard that on a couple people. I just decided I was going to forgive and let it go, and it was gone, just like that.
And it was gone.
So let's talk about the whole miracle thing.
Yeah, I love that. You know, that for it for some people, just making that choice, I forgive, everything in their life shifts and it changes. They find that peace. You know, lawsuits settled. What I found when people made that choice to forgive, as an attorney, their lawsuits were settling. People started treating each other nicer. You know, they stopped using their children against each other. I mean, all sorts of miracles happened, and people saw that in these stories. They found the same thing, that once they chose to forgive, their life shifted. You know, how we see things is so much a result of the thoughts that we think. So when we start thinking different thoughts, what we see changes.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And it happened for them.
Wow.
It's harder for me, Kalia. I could
yeah,
not.
Yeah, it's harder for me, too. Well, you know, and I guess it just really, yeah, maybe it just really depends on the situation. But, you know, we do have just one more caller. I want to see if we can just do a quick question. 713, we don't have a lot of time left. Do you have a quick question?
Hi, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
My name is Elizabeth. I live in Los Angeles.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello. I'm very grateful to be talking with you right now, because your message and your talk about forgiveness today came at such a beautiful time in my life. I just actually found you, Kalia. Is that how you pronounce your name, Kalia?
Kalia.
Okay. I just found out about all of your lessons 2 days ago. And after reading through your book, your online book, I had a sudden realization that I grew up as the daughter of a narcissist, and my mom was a victim of narcissism and cheating and all sorts of stuff. And I lived with that, and I'm really empathetic. And I've been dating someone who I think might be my soulmate, and I've been projecting onto him all of my issues with my father. And I actually accused him yesterday of being a narcissist because I had been provoking him, and almost forcing out what I expected my partner Jason to be, which was my father. Really,
wow, realization. What a realization.
Yeah.
What a gift. What a gift, just kind of what Lori was saying.
A huge, huge gift. And I found that when I expressed all this to him, I suddenly realized that it was actually me who had done all that. So I almost instantly took responsibility, and I've been moving really quickly with this because I'm at the very tail end of what might be the end of my relationship with this man who is beautiful. Like, he has been so patient and been teaching me, and so I'm at the stage of forgiveness, and I meditated on it all day long today.
You know, we just have 90 seconds. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We just have
thank you.
You are so welcome.
So what are some tips for, like, living in gratitude all day long when you're so used to living with, like, the memory of all your pain?
Okay, I'm gonna mute you out and have Lori address that really quick. We just have a minute, Lori.
quick
version.
For me, really quickly, Elizabeth, is getting a daily practice. A daily spiritual practice is going to keep you on track, and you have to figure out what works for you. That can be meditation, that can be prayer, that can be writing in your gratitude journal. What am I grateful for? It's noticing the gifts every single day. It's practicing. Kaylee?
And what a good time. What a good time of the year to think about practicing gratitude. And so, Lori, tell people where they can go to get your book real quick.
Yeah, so you can go on Amazon and you can type in forgiveness and Lori Rubenstein. You can go right to my website, www.lorirubenstein.com, And Rubenstein is Rubenstein.
So thank you so, so, so very much, Lori. It was awesome, and I hope to have you back again soon.
Kaylia, thank you so, so, so much.
For another enlightening conversation.
Awesome.
Okay, have a good day, everyone.
Bye, everybody.